Chapter 28. Sharp indeed if they can prevent it. I made another adventure or two, but they were but trifles too, though sufficient to live on. After this nothing considerable offering for a good while, I began to think that I must give over the trade in earnest, but my governess, who was not willing to lose me, and expected great things of me, brought me one day into company with a young woman and a fellow, that went for her husband, though as it appeared afterwards, she was not his wife, but they were partners, it seems, in the trade they carried on, and partners in something else. In short, they robbed together, lay together, were taken together, and at last were hanged together. I came into a kind of league with these two by the help of my governess, and they carried me out into three or four adventures, where I rather saw them commit some coarse and unhandy robberies, in which nothing but a great stock of impudence on their side, and gross negligence on the people's side who were robbed, could have made them successful. So I resolved from that time forward, to be very cautious, how I adventured upon anything with them. And indeed, when two or three unlucky projects were proposed by them, I declined the offer, and persuaded them against it. One time they particularly proposed robbing a watchmaker of three gold watches, which they had eyed in the daytime, and found the place where he laid them. One of them had so many keys of all kinds, that he made no question to open the place where the watchmaker had laid them. And so we made a kind of an appointment. But when I came to look narrowly into the thing, I found they proposed breaking open the house, and this, as a thing out of my way, I would not embark in, so they went without me. They did get into the house by main force, and broke up the locked place where the watches were, but found but one of the gold watches, and a silver one, which they took, and got out of the house again very clear. But the family, being alarmed, cried out thieves, apostrophe, and the man was pursued and taken. The young woman had got off too, but unhappily was stopped at a distance, and the watches found upon her. And thus I had a second escape, for they were convicted, and both hanged, being old offenders, though but young people. As I said before, that they robbed together and lay together, so now they hanged together, and there ended my new partnership. I began now to be very wary, having so narrowly escaped a scouring, and having such an example before me, but I had a new tempter, who prompted me every day, I mean my governess, and now a prize presented, which as it came by her management, so she expected a good share of the booty. There was a good quantity of Flanders lace lodged in a private house, where she had gotten intelligence of it, and Flanders lace being prohibited, it was a good booty to any custom house officer that could come at it. I had a full account from my governess, as well of the quantity, as of the very place where it was concealed, and I went to a custom house officer, and told him I had such a discovery, to make to him of such a quantity of lace, if he would assure me that I should have my due share of the reward. This was so just an offer, that nothing could be fairer, so he agreed, and taking a constable and me with him, we beset the house. As I told him I could go directly to the place, he left it to me, and the hole being very dark, I squeezed myself into it, with a candle in my hand, and so reached the pieces out to him, taking care as I gave him some so, to secure as much about myself as I could conveniently dispose of. There was near number 300 worth of lace in the hole, and I secured about number 50 worth of it to myself. The people of the house were not owners of the lace, but a merchant who had entrusted them with it, so that they were not so surprised as I thought they would be. I left the officer overjoyed with his prize, and fully satisfied with what he had got, and appointed to meet him at a house of his own directing, where I came, after I had disposed of the cargo I had about me, of which he had not the least suspicion. When I came to him, he began to capitulate with me, believing I did not understand the right I had to a share in the prize, and would fain have put me off with number 20, but I let him know that I was not so ignorant as he supposed I was, And yet I was glad too, that he offered to bring me to a certainty. I asked number 100 and he rose up to number 30. I fell to number 80 and he rose again to number 40. In a word, he offered number 50 and I consented, only demanding a piece of lace, which I though came to about number 8 or number 9, as if it had been for my own wear, and he agreed to it. So I got number 50 in money paid me that same night, and made an end of the bargain. Nor did he ever know who I was, or where to inquire for me, so that if it had been discovered that part of the goods were embezzled, he could have made no challenge upon me for it. I very punctually divided this spoil with my governess, and I passed with her from this time for a very dexterous manager in the nicest cases. I found that this last was the best and easiest sort of work that was in my way, and I made it my business to inquire out prohibited goods, and after buying some, usually betrayed them, but none of these discoveries amounted to anything considerable, not like that I related just now. But I was willing to act safe, and was still cautious of running the great risks which I found others did, and in which they miscarried every day. The next thing of moment was an attempt at a gentlewoman's good watch. It happened in a crowd, at a meeting house, where I was in very great danger of being taken. I had full hold of her watch, but giving a great jostle, as if somebody had thrust me against her, and in the juncture giving the watch a fair pull, I found it would not come, so I let it go that moment, and cried out, as if I had been killed, that somebody had trod upon my foot, and that there were certainly pickpockets there, for somebody or other had given a pull at my watch. For you are to observe that on these adventures we always went very well dressed, and I had very good clothes on, and a gold watch by my side, as like a lady as other fold. I had no sooner said so, but the other gentlewoman cried out a pickpocket to, for somebody, she said, had tried to pull her watch away. When I touched her watch I was close to her, but when I cried out I stopped as it were short, and the crowd bearing her forward a little, she made a noise too, but it was at some distance from me, so that she did not in the least suspect me. But when she cried out a pickpocket, apostrophe somebody cried, "Eh, and here has been another. This gentlewoman has been attempted to." Apostrophe, at that very instance, a little farther in the crowd, and very luckily too, they cried out a pickpocket, apostrophe again, and really seized a young fellow in the very act. This, though unhappy for the wretch, was very opportunely for my case, though I had carried it off handsomely enough before, but now it was out of doubt, and all the loose part of the crowd ran that way, and the poor boy was delivered up to the rage of the street, which is a cruelty I need not describe, and which, however, they are always glad of, rather than to be sent to Newgate, where they lie often a long time, till they are almost perished, and sometimes they are hanged, and the best they can look for, if they are convicted, is to be transported. This was a narrow escape to me, and I was so frighted, that I ventured, no more at gold, watches a great while. There was indeed a great many concurring circumstances in this adventure which assisted to my escape, but the chief was, that the woman whose watch I had pulled at was a fool, that is to say, she was ignorant of the nature of the attempt, which one would have thought she should not have been, seeing she was wise enough to fasten her watch, so that it could not be slipped up. But she was in such a fright, that she had no thought about her proper for the discovery. For she, when she felt the pull, screamed out, and pushed herself forward, and put all the people about her into disorder, but said not a word of her watch, or of a pickpocket, for at least 2 minutes' time, which was time enough for me, and to spare. For as I had cried out behind her, as I have said, and bore myself back in the crowd as she bore forward, there were several people, at least 7 or 8, the throng being still moving on, that were got between me and her in that time, and then I crying out a pickpocket, apostrophe rather sooner than she, or at least as soon, she might as well be the person suspected as I, and the people were confused in their inquiry. Whereas, had she with a presence of mind needful on such an occasion, As soon as she felt the pull, Nut screamed out as she did, but turned immediately around, and seized the next body that was behind her. She had infallibly taken me. This is a direction, not of the kindest sort to the fraternity, but is certainly a key to the clue of a pickpocket's motions, and whoever can follow it will as certainly catch the thief as he will be sure to miss, if he does not. I had another adventure, which puts this matter out of doubt, and which may be an instruction for posterity in the case of a pickpocket. My good old governess, to give a short touch at her history, though she had left off the trade, was, as I may say, born a pickpocket, and, as I understood afterwards, had run through all the several degrees of that art, and yet had never been taken but once, when she was so grossly detected, that she was convicted and ordered to be transported. But being a woman of a rare tongue, and without having money in her pocket, she found means, the ship putting into Ireland for provisions, to get on shore there, where she lived and practiced her old trade for some years. When falling into another sort of bad company, she turned midwife and procuress, and played 100 pranks there, which she gave me a little history of in confidence between us as we grew more intimate. And it was to this wicked creature that I owed all the art and dexterity I arrived to, in which there were few that ever went beyond me, or that practiced so long without any misfortune. It was after those adventures in Ireland, and when she was pretty well known in that country, that she left Dublin, and came over to England, where, the time of her transportation being not expired, she left her former trade, for fear of falling into bad hands again, for then she was sure to have gone to wreck. Here she set up the same trade she had followed in Ireland, in which she soon, by her admirable management and good tongue, arrived to the height which I have already described, and indeed began to be rich, though her trade fell off again afterwards, as I have hinted before. I mentioned thus much of the history of this woman here, the better to account for the concern she had in the wicked life I was now leading, into all the particulars of which she led me, as it were, by the hand, and gave me such directions, and I so well followed them, that I grew the greatest artist of my time, and worked myself out of every danger with such dexterity, that when several more of my comrades ran themselves into Newgate presently, and by that time they had been half a year at the trade, I had now practiced upwards of 5 years, and the people at Newgate did not so much as know me. They had heard much of me indeed, and often expected me there, but I always got off, though many times in the extremest danger. One of the greatest dangers I was now in, was that I was too well known among the trade, and some of them, whose hatred was owing rather to envy than any injury I had done them, began to be angry that I should always escape when they were always catched and hurried to Newgate. These were they that gave me the name of Mole Flanders. For it was no more of affinity with my real name, or with any of the name I had ever gone by, than black is of kin to white, except that once, as before, I called myself Mrs. Flanders, when I sheltered myself in the mint, but that these rogues never knew, nor could I ever learn how they came to give me the name, or what the occasion of it was. I was soon informed that some of these who were gotten fast into Newgate had vowed to impeach me. And as I knew that two or three of them were but too able to do it, I was under a great concern about it, and kept within doors for a good while. But my governess, whom I always made partner in my success, and who now played a sure game with me, for that she had a share of the gain, and no share in the hazard I say, my governess was something impatient of my leading such a useless unprofitable life, as she called it. And she laid a new contrivance for my going abroad, and this was to dress me up in men's clothes, and so put me into a new kind of practice. I was tall and personable, but a little too smooth-faced for a man. However, I seldom went abroad, but in the night, it did well enough. But it was a long time before I could behave in my new clothes, I mean, as to my craft. It was impossible to be so nimble, so ready, so dexterous at these things, in a dress so contrary to nature, and I did everything clumsily, so I had neither the success nor the easiness of escape that I had before, and I resolved to leave it off. But that resolution was confirmed soon after by the following accident. As my governess disguised me like a man, so she joined me with a man, a young fellow that was nimble enough at his business, and for about 3 weeks we did very well together. Our principal trade was watching shopkeepers' counters, and slipping off any kind of goods we could see carelessly laid anywhere, and we made several good bargains, as we called them, at this work. And as we kept always together, so we grew very intimate, yet he never knew that I was not a man, nay, though I several times went home with him to his lodgings, according as our business directed, and 4 or 5 times lay with him all night. But our design lay another way, and it was absolutely necessary to me to conceal my sex from him, as appeared afterwards. The circumstances of our living, coming in late, and such business to do as required, that nobody should be trusted with the coming into our lodgings, were such as made it impossible to me to refuse lying with him, unless I would have owned my sex, and as it was, I effectually concealed myself. But his ill, and my good fortune, soon put an end to this life, which I must own I was sick of too, on several other accounts. We had made several prizes in this new way of business, but the last would be extraordinary. There was a shop in a certain street which had a warehouse behind it that looked into another street, the house making the corner of the turning. Through the window of the warehouse we saw, lying on the counter or showboard, which was just before it, 5 pieces of silks, besides other stuffs, and though it was almost dark, yet the people, being busy in the fore shop with customers, had not had time to shut up those windows, or else had forgot it. This the young fellow was so overjoyed with, that he could not restrain himself. It lay all within his reach, he said, and he swore violently to me, that he would have it, if he broke down the house for it. I dissuaded him a little, but saw there was no remedy, so he ran rashly upon it, slipped out a square of the sash window dexterously enough, and without noise, and got out 4 pieces of the silks, and came with them towards me, but was immediately pursued with a terrible clutter and noise. We were standing together indeed, but I had not taken any of the goods out of his hand, when I said to him hastily, "You are undone, fly, for God's sake." He ran like lightning, and I too, but the pursuit was hotter after him, because he had the goods, than after me. He dropped 2 of the pieces, which stopped them a little, but the crowd increased, and pursued us both. They took him soon after with the other 2 pieces upon him, and then the rest followed me. I ran for it, and got into my governess's house, whither some quick-eyed people followed me too warmly, as to fix me there. They did not immediately knock at the door, by which I got time to throw off my disguise, and dress me in my own clothes. Besides, when they came there, my governess, who had her tail ready, kept her door shut, and called out to them, and told them there was no man come in there. The people affirmed there did a man come in there, and swore they would break open the door. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.